past my bedtime.
It's not past your bedtime.
Past my bad parents. Past my bedtime.
The sun went down while we were at the beach, that's all.
Yeah. Past my bedtime. I should be asleep by now.
We're doing the intro to the San Carlos Computer Club that happened today. This is the earliest that we have done the intro.
Woohoo!
Oh, yeah.
I'm going to be asleep.
And we're here in the car making our way back to the house with Yuya.
Hey!
The mommy.
The mommy.
Bibiana.
White child.
White disappointed child.
Bedtime.
Emily.
Proud envy.
Proud envy. Okay. And of course, me, Scott Stimson, your host, the San Carlos Computer Club, meets every Tuesday.
Number one, the best.
Number one, the best. Thing. I always appreciate that like you give me on my Facebook post.
Oh, and I share it.
Love.
You, yeah, and Scott, sitting in a tree.
K-I-S-S-I-N-G.
You first comes love, then comes marriage, then comes a baby. I learned that one from Josie.
Still past my bedtime.
It is not past your bedtime. What time is it? It is past your bedtime.
I've been telling you.
Oh my gosh, Bibi's supposed to be in bed. She has school tomorrow. She's the only one in the car that has school tomorrow.
Yep.
Hell yeah. Oh, that feels great.
Well, this has been the intro to the San Carlos Computer Club for today. What was today? The first of June.
Happy Pride Month, you guys.
Happy Pride Month. Watch your Google photos go from free to whittling it out away to 15 gigabytes unless you buy extra storage space day.
Yeah.
This is the end of the intro. I am Scott Stimson, your host. This is my family.
Woo!
We're chaos demons.
And we're here to say, tech on!
Tech on!
Until next time, bye.
God, that's a lot of, like, liver bladder, you guys.
Oi, oi. Oh my gosh, I jinxed myself, okay. Overdriver Duo. And where'd you say they're from? Brazil. River is stopping the whole everything. How cute. It's just the two of them? You feel it right when I hear the music ring. With the soldiers, with the soldiers of me. Bonus. How do I sound? Testing. Can you guys hear me?
Yeah, you're 5x5.
Excellent. Thanks.
Yeah, anybody who's run a two-way radio would probably knows what that means. It just means that your volume and your strength are 5x5. They're top.
Ah, okay.
Loud and clear.
And Paul is an old Navy boy. I don't know if he's a pilot or not.
The near shore Navy.
Yeah, there you go.
Coast Guard.
The green water boys, not the blue water boys.
The green water.
Our rough water is when you have a lighthouse, which the Coast Guard administered, and the windows are 100 feet off the surface of the ocean, and they get broken by a rock in a wave.
Yeah.
A rock in a wave breaks the window.
Of lighthouses in storms, and the thing is 50, 60 feet high, and there's waves crashing right over top of the dam. I don't think I need to be there.
There's somebody inside reading the Bible.
No doubt.
Oh, hey, Bob, glad you could join us this morning. Or maybe join us this morning. Can you guys still hear me?
Yes.
Oh, good. I am about to hit the streaming button. Turn this off.
Let's go downstream.
Let's do it. We'll be live in a moment. And we've got a good group. Irving, we've been missing you, man.
Yeah, good morning, everyone. I've been busy up here. We're up here in Alaska, and I've been pretty busy waiting for a boat that's not being built. All is well.
It looks like you got a great internet connection wherever you are.
Well, we just hooked up to an Ethernet. First time since I'm up here, and I'm really loving it.
Awesome.
Irving, how did you get to Alaska?
We drove to Las Vegas and then flew through. There's no problem flying over Canada.
Right. So you flew from Vegas to
Seattle to to Anchorage and then on to our small town.
Looks like you're in an RV.
We are. This is where we live for 4 or 5 months a year.
We just bought a tiny home, a.k.a. motor home.
Oh, we saw that on Facebook. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's in the driveway. It needs to be filled and figured out where we would sit and what we would do. But we may come to you live from the motorhome one Tuesday.
I was going to say you should plan it for next week. Next week, we'll join the San Carlos Computer Club with Bill in the motorhome and Cheryl at home in a dramatic discussion about why he's living out there. I am Scott Stimson from International Computer Solutions and the San Carlos Computer Club. I'm so happy you guys have joined us today for our weekly meeting. It's Tuesday, the 1st of June. This is the day that Google will take away your unlimited photo storage plan. So keep that on your radar. If you are still using Google Photos, which you probably are, I am, it will start incrementally counting towards a 15 gigabyte cap unless you're buying into their storage. Let's see. What else is happening today? I have brought some topics that I thought would be interesting for you folks, and I'm happy to entertain any topics you have. Hello, Maggie. I just saw you popped on. We got a good-looking group of people.
I'm here.
Before we get too involved, I just want to remind people that this is a YouTube channel, and I am trying to get at least 100 subscribers. It's a little depressing being on YouTube and having less than 100 subscribers, but if I could get 100 subscribers, then I could make a pretty name for the San Carlos Computer Club YouTube channel, and that's really my goal, is to be able to shout out youtube.com/San Carlos Computer Club, and everyone would know that's our channel. Right now, it's a ridiculous, like, 120-character code that gets us there. Because it's a ridiculous code, I have changed a domain, a subdomain. So if you are trying to get to our channel, you could just type in youtube.sccclub.org, and that takes you directly to the channel. But I still want the pretty name from YouTube. So if you got a Google account, I know you got one because you're here with me now, head over to YouTube and subscribe to our channel, and I'll do the same thing I did last time. I'll put this link right here. This time I'm more on it. More on it. He said more on.
We could play with that term.
So this link will take you, I should warm it. YouTube.slo.org. And that link will take you right over to the channel, and you could just hit subscribe and increment that number up. I think we're at 32, right? 33, something. So we're a third of the way there. What else do I have to announce at the top of the hour? I have made some changes to our website and embraced a couple of services, both Goodreads and Tracks. And now if you go to the website, you will find a link at the top called Recommend It. Let me put the website into our chat if you want to chat. Click on it. If you bring up our website, you will find a menu bar at the top. There's a menu bar, and along the menu bar, there is one called Recommended. And if you hover over that, you'll see movies, shows, and books. And what these do, if you click on them, they just launch that service where I put our recommendations we've talked about in clubs. So slowly but surely, Track will bring up a list of the movies. This is a separate list just of movies that we've talked about in club. Track also, again, has those features that if you go into one of these, it should tell you where you can watch it online. If you sign up for a Track account, you can list all the online services you use, so it will click right over to that service if you decide to watch it. For example, Darkman right here is on iTunes and Google Play. So that's a movie list, and if I come back here, shows are the same thing. It's on Track. You bring up shows, it'll just take you to the Track list of TV shows we've talked about. I did not realize how many TV shows we were talking about until I started building this list. There's 113 TV shows on this list.
Scott, I have a question when we have time.
Sure. I just want to demonstrate one last thing, and I'll get you, Irving. If I go to books, this doesn't go to Tracks. This goes to Goodreads, and this is a shelf that I've created on Goodreads. If you're looking for any of the books we were talking about, you should not need an account on any of these services. You don't need a Track account to look this. You don't need a Goodreads account to look this. But so I'll periodically be putting our recommendations in these places, and you can find them right off of the webpage under Recommended. Irving, what question can I try and answer for you?
Okay, yeah, just just reminded me, because I have the Ethernet, I'm trying to set up a hotspot for my wife's tablet and mine. And so I was directed through YouTube to check to see if it was supported by Windows. And both my computers, which I paid good money for, don't support it. And I've ordered an all-in-one computer coming, one of those desktop all-in-one things. And I want to make sure before I accept it, whether that'll support it. Why is my expensive laptop not supporting the hotspot?
Yeah, I'm not sure what we're talking about. Why would it not support the hotspot? That doesn't sound right.
No.
Well, what is the reason that it's not supported?
It doesn't give a reason. It says before you can set, it says it's easy. The information I got is that it's easy to set up a hotspot from Windows on your laptop computer. But before you do, you have to go and they give you a bunch of instructions to find out if it is supported. If it says yes, yes. If it says no,
not no. The hotspot.
Both of my computers, one that's not that old, I don't think. Maybe the years are going faster than I realize. They both say no.
That doesn't sound right, Irving. I'm not sure what we're looking at. But well, what's the model of the thing that we're looking at?
Well, I just want to set up a hotspot to my my laptop. And let me see if I have something. I was told to go to a command prompt.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm not understanding at all, Irving. You're trying to turn your computer into a hotspot.
That's correct.
Ah, okay. I got you. Well, I still would expect it to work. I expect it to work on computers that are 7 years old. If you've got the Ethernet, there should be a way to share it, and I have not done it forever, but there should be a way to share your Ethernet to the Wi-Fi, and it would be in network settings.
Well, I went there. As I say, the instruction called for you to first see if it's supported, and I have Windows 10. I don't know what version. And
hey, can you walk me through it so I can see what you're looking at?
Well, I was told to go to command prompt and run as administrator.
Okay.
And then right click it and type in NETSH space WLAN space show space drivers.
Okay. NET space LAN space drivers.
Well, NETSH space WLAN space show space drivers. And at that point, you should be able to see whether it's supported.
NETSH. Is that right?
That's correct. Space.
Space. WLAN.
Space.
Space. Drivers.
No, put show in first.
Okay. Oh, show.
Space show and then space drivers.
There we go. And where is it telling you that it's not supported?
Well, I'd have to actually get out of this here and try to do it on my computer.
Well, your instructions are hosted network supported. Is that what you're talking about?
Right. Hosted network, that's the one.
Okay. Mine says no as well. That's it. Irving, why don't we, I can't answer this question for you because previous versions of Windows were able to share a Wi-Fi and create a hotspot. A Windows XP was able to do it. Windows 7, Windows Vista. There hasn't been a problem with creating hotspots. But to be honest with you, I haven't tried to create a hotspot with Windows 10. And maybe it's specifically a software.
Okay.
I'm still looking at it right now. But why don't you let me write this down as a note? Give me a chance to do some research on creating a hotspot on Windows, because I got the same message you did, that it says not supported. I don't believe that's true.
Okay, I'd appreciate it. You can email me or phone me or whatever.
You have an old router that you could put in line?
No.
That's definitely what I would recommend in the end, Irving, is I think what would be a better would just put a router on and not rely on a computer to do it.
Wonderful. So would it plug into what, USB?
Well, you would plug it into the Ethernet, and then you'd plug your computer that's Ethernet into the router. You've got a similar setup in your house in San Carlos.
Well, okay, I'll go over and get a router. That's easy. And then I got the one in the bedroom.
That's right.
That's right. Okay, I'll try that. Good suggestion.
Yeah, it's a better solution in the long term anyway. You really don't want to be dedicating one of your computers to being a router. That if you use a computer as a hotspot for other devices in your life, they're going to exist on a different network than that computer does.
Yeah, but I have a problem as I'm looking at it. I'm using my neighbor's neighbor's Ethernet. I'm coming out of his and going into the Ethernet on my computer. Where would I plug the router from?
Oh, it wouldn't be a problem. You'd unplug that from your computer, plug it into the router as the WAN source, and then use another Ethernet cord to plug your computer into your new router.
So it would be like a daisy chain.
That's exactly what it would be like. And it would form its own pocket of network for you with its own set of addresses. And then all your devices could sit on that separate network.
And will it require a setup, or will it be simple?
Well, that comes down to whatever router you happen to get, how easy it would be. But most routers out of the box, you could plug in the way I just described, and they would just start working. You'd still need to set up the Wi-Fi hotspot, probably put a password on it.
Yeah, okay, that's not a problem. Yeah. Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. I see Judy's on. Hi, Judy, and Jim's here too. Hello, Jim. Judy, I've been waiting for you for 2 weeks or 3 weeks.
I tell you, I got home. Let's see, I left there last Tuesday, left San Carlos, got back to Colorado on Thursday, and it's rained and hailed and rained and hailed, and it was 36 degrees this morning.
And you're so happy to be back.
I am green.
Are you going to go to a movie theater? I've discovered in the last couple of weeks, this is the thing that I missed the most.
You can go to Guaymas.
I can. They're open, but Guaymas isn't as vaccinated as the United States is. Well, my Mexican family's scary. Like, don't do it.
It's scary up here, let me tell you, because nobody, well, that's not true. Most of the people are maskless, and, you know, it's the honor system up here, and you know what I think about that. So,
Well, you heard the joke, right?
What?
You can figure out who's vaccinated and who's not.
Yeah.
Just ask them who they think won the election.
Well, I hate to say that I do believe that, but I do.
I gotta tell Mike that.
My GPS in my car got lost in Lordsburg, New Mexico, and was going around and around and around in circles, and finally told me I went into Elephant Butte Lake. And so my car is at the dealer right now they're doing something to fix my nav system.
That's wild. The only thing that would be crazier than that is if you weren't the only car in the lake.
I know. Well, and the thing is, if I didn't know where I was going, you know, I take the same route home most of the time, and it would have been really hard because I'm not, you know, the dog doesn't read a map, and then I would have to pull over to read the map. So,
well, I think it's just a sign of the coming alien invasion, that they're redirecting people into the lake.
Well, they've said that, oh yes, there are UFOs, except they call them something.
UAPs, aren't they?
Unidentified aerial phenomena.
So, Judy, I got two things I wanted to check with you now that you're back with us. One is just a quick follow-up on 14.5.1. No problems? Happy with the update?
I think I am, except this... Oh, so this brings... Let me bring up another one real quick, and then I'll answer that one. So, okay. I'm back here. Everything was supposed to be working. My internet was supposed to be working, blah, 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 blah. You know, I get back here, and I'm getting 14. 14.
Oh, fun.
and I have fiber optics, so 14. So, I get a technician out here. He came on Friday, this last Friday, and he goes, well, the contacts were a little dirty down in the main box. I said, oh, okay. And meanwhile, I had called and they said, oh, you're eligible for 100 megabit service. I said, but yeah, but that costs me extra money for install. No, we'll waive that for you. And I'll lower it from $85 price for life to $65 a month price for life. I said, oh, that sounds good. So he goes, I said, the tech is on his way. Can he upgrade my router? No. So the tech gets here. He says, I said, can you do this? He said, well, sure. So now I have 100 kind of megabit service, but this morning it was down to 49. And this has been since Friday. So anyway, yes, I'm happy, but my laptop would not, or my iPad would not connect to the internet for a while. I had to actually reboot it. So I don't know whether that's a 14.5.2 or whatever I'm up to now, or just whatever.
Judy, do you have fiber optic coming into your house?
Yes, I do.
So you have a separate cable. It's one of those fiberglass cables.
Yeah, it's about the size of a piece of string.
So what you're describing sounds to me more like it's not your problem.
Right.
It sounds more like it's a capacity issue with the way they've done their infrastructure, because it's just a glass light beam. There shouldn't be any dirty contacts or anything that have anything to do with you.
Yeah, he was a really nice guy, and I just said, oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah. But and a modem upgrade might make sense.
It's really fancy.
Yeah,
I'll walk in here and I know my
because the way fiber optics work is that each generation you get more capacity, more throughput across the same piece of glass.
Mm-hmm.
And you just have to upgrade the equipment on both ends. So as long as they're upgrading their equipment, yeah. Is that it?
That's it.
Hold on a second. Let me take a closer look at this.
That's my modem, and then I've got this thing that's the fiber optic thing.
Ah, okay. Yeah, that's coming in, and you're feeding it to a... What is that device?
That's my modem. The other thing, this one over here is the fiber optic. They call it a something terminal.
You know what? You've got a splitter off of it. Are you getting your phone service off of that as well?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
Because they didn't tell me when I went to fiber optics that I would no longer have a hardwired phone.
Yeah, that's something to think about.
It is definitely.
We've had telephone, hardwired telephone technology for over 100 years, and even back when we had the flood here, those phones continued to work.
Exactly. And this one, I didn't realize until the power went out that that meant not only do I not have internet, I have no phone, but I have no cell phone because I have no cell service.
Oh, in your area.
House without Wi-Fi.
Oh, well, that's infuriating.
It was. But anyway, but as far as I know, my update is good. I'm all current. I went ahead and did it all, even the latest one that came through.
Hey, Cheryl, are you up to the latest version, 14.5.1?
We're talking on my cell phone?
Yeah, that's the one that was reinstalling apps.
Yeah.
Actually, Scott, it's 14.6 now.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
See, you disappear for 3 weeks and we go up a version.
Two weeks.
That's part of the form of development these days, isn't it? They iterate like every 2 weeks.
And I have done that update on both my iPad and my iPhone. I've not noticed any problems on the phone. And I don't think that this was an update problem on my iPad.
Well, Cheryl and I were talking earlier about an issue she's having with her phone where it feels like every time she goes to use an app, the app needs to be reinstalled to store.
And
I
just tried to check what version I'm on and I have to log back into my iCloud every time I do anything these last couple of days. Okay, so my model, my version 13.5.1.
Well, that's why.
Are you on, which iPhone is it? Is it the 7?
6S.
Oh,
I think that should support it. I think that's the last of the older generation.
This is my brand new cell phone. I don't care that it's 3 years old, but this is brand new.
I'm checking the list right now to see what's compatible with this latest version.
So, Cheryl, does it say that you have updates available?
It must.
Let me check.
It must, because it says that the iPhone 6S is supported.
So where would I find that?
You go into settings.
Settings. There should be a red dot next to them, an indicator.
Apple ID. General, maybe?
Settings, general.
Software update.
Software update.
Checking. Apple 14.6 includes the option to unlock phone with Apple Watch, download and install.
Other things too.
Do I want 14.6?
Yes.
According to Judy, you do.
Judy?
Security updates.
Okay, Judy.
Okay, first of all, you might want to just double check that you've got a backup of your phone in your iCloud.
Okay, how do I do that?
I'm not ready to give those instructions. I didn't know we were going to be talking about it.
I don't know either.
But, if you go into, in your settings at the top, there's something about your account. If you click on it, it should tell you what you're using your iCloud for.
I've got my iCloud. It says under, it says how much of the 2 terabytes has been used.
Okay. It should also distinguish what it's used for as well, and your backup should be one of those things.
Backup is a tiny, but I can't find where it manages.
Somewhere in there, it gives you an indicator that when the last backup was. And if everything's working correctly, it should have been like an hour ago or a day ago.
So go back through, and how did you look that up? Oh, iCloud.
Okay, the last backup was yesterday.
Okay, so I would just make sure, I mean, that's good enough for me. I mean, if you wanted to do the software update, what we know is that we've got a backup of everything that was on your phone, the setup instructions for the apps and your settings and your contacts and everything should be available through that backup. If anything blows up,
and it's only as old as yesterday.
Okay. What it says, though, is choose data to back up. And I've got a few things, but I don't think I have. Oh, yeah. Wait a minute. It looks like they're all on.
Yeah, definitely choose everything that you'd be concerned about losing.
Well, it's taking things that I'm not concerned about. How about that?
I would take those, too, because sometimes you don't know what you should be concerned about. I'm a big fan of defaults.
Okay. And since I now have 2 terabytes of storage.
Yeah, it's no big deal. In fact, this is the beauty of buying into that subscription. Especially if you're a Mac house, it just makes so much sense to have all that in the cloud.
So how did you get 2 terabytes?
Bill signed up for something and put me on a family plan.
And how much is it a month, Bill?
I think it's $10 a month.
He said, don't ask me.
I think it was $12 Canadian. And I signed up on a month basis just to see if we liked using it. And you get a better deal if you sign up for a year.
Yeah.
But right now, we're on a one-month basis. And I think it's about $10, $9.99 US, I think.
Okay.
But it sure makes sense to keep all your cloud, your pictures in the cloud, your documents in your cloud, the settings in the cloud, even your email settings are all in the cloud. Your passwords are all in the cloud. In a Macintosh world, it's beautiful because you pull out your other Macintosh. That you have a problem, like Cheryl's having this issue with her phone. You just format it and sign back in, and everything just feeds up the phone from the cloud.
Or if you decide you're going to buy a new device.
That's right. That's right. You just add it to the...
You look at your last backup. So I went to settings.
Okay. I went to iCloud Storage, Manage Storage.
Okay. Hold on. I was just there, but now I've lost it again.
Okay.
So iCloud Storage.
I under settings, I went to Apple ID. So right at the top where it says Apple ID. I go down to iCloud.
I'm there.
And then I go to Manage Storage.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where I found backups was the second thing down.
You know, Judy, I think you can also see your backups from another device. Since you've got a Macintosh computer, I think you can go into iClouds on your Mac and your phone and your tablet.
Oh, but then how come I can't see my iPad? I don't think I'm in the right thing.
Because you're not on a Macintosh.
Huh?
You're on an iPhone. But if you had like a MacBook Pro or an iMac, you'd be able to go into the Macintosh iCloud software, and there's an inventory of all the devices that you have in iCloud.
Okay. So an iPad and an iPhone are different than a Mac?
Yes, ma'am.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, yeah. They're derived from the same software, but they're completely different platforms. They don't need to be, but they are.
This is an iOS device.
Right. I was just coloring our conversation with more trivial information. Because, Judy, you have a MacBook at your disposal. You can see an inventory of all the backups on your iCloud.
But I never will. I can't go to my Windows machine and see my iCloud.
That's you getting punished by Apple for choosing the competition. Bad, Cheryl.
I'm so confused. Mr. Thompson, did we not get the Apple iCloud?
You don't have a MacBook computer. You don't have an iMac. You're not running Mac OS. And so the features that I'm describing to Judy aren't available because you went with Windows.
A MacBook is my laptop, which is different than my iPhone and my iPad.
Don't get frustrated with me. I'm just being silly. It's one of the sad realities and that's one of the reasons that I think the iCloud is a no-brainer if you're a Macintosh house. If you've got MacBooks and iMacs and iPhones and iPads, why would you get your storage anywhere else? The question becomes more nuanced when you're somebody like me and you, where we've got Android devices and iPhone devices and Windows computers and Linux computers.
Scott,
it's not very clear.
Scott, you skipped a beat on Cheryl.
I did?
I think so. She wants to know what she can see on her iPad, not her Windows 10 machine. She has an iPad and an iPhone.
Right. I don't think you can see that inventory on the iDevices. I think it's only available on... But don't quote me on that because it's been a long time since I've looked at
it. iCloud.com, right?
Or you could do that. You could go into iCloud.com. It may keep an inventory. It does keep an inventory of your devices there. I don't know if it keeps an inventory of the backups, but you can definitely see all your different devices.
Okay, two things. One, Bill, I thought you on your Windows machine could see the iCloud.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. So that was the one thing. The second thing is we are considering buying 2 iPads for this household. And we thought that the iPads with the iPhones with the 2 terabyte of storage would get us everything we need. Are you now telling me that Apple is going to penalize me for the fact that I also have 2 Microsoft laptops?
No, not at all. No, all I was describing was a feature that's available to Judy because she's chosen to use a desktop made by Apple.
Okay, quit trying to make Judy and I competitive. We do not want to compete for who's better.
Scott, you realize that after you're done with her, she's going to come and yell at me. So stop it.
But you know,
I'm looking at the Windows iCloud. Since we're talking about this, I opened up my iCloud on Windows, and I'm looking for anything that might give me an indicator of devices connected to it, but it doesn't show. It doesn't show me anything that makes me aware of any of the Apple devices. I've got 2, now 3 ancient Apple computers that are connected to it, but you can't see that here, which the same experience on a Macintosh computer would list those devices like right below the cloud. It would show me when it was backed up, how big it was.
Actually, it does not show me on my iPad when it was last backed up, nor can I see it on my iPhone. I see my 3 devices.
Well, Cheryl, how'd she get to see it? How does she get to see that? You were just looking at it.
I know, and it's not there like that. When I look at, hold on.
How to check last iCloud backup. You know what? I'm going to put it in my notes here, and we'll find a resource for it, and I'll pass it around when we do.
Can you see this? This is that iCloud backup thing. See that? And
yeah.
There's nothing there that says backup, even though they're all checked to backup.
Oh, you know, it might be in a different place now that you've got a newer operating system. Look under iCloud. You should see a bunch of apps that use iCloud as well. And I think backup is one of the apps.
Oh, well, let me see. Maybe it is.
And I feel like we should move on.
I think so, too.
But Judy, I did have one other Apple thing for you.
Okay.
And this is about the calendar notifications through email. Did you figure that out?
No.
Okay, so I've got a link here that takes you to an explanation of how to stop these email notifications from your Macintosh computer.
Okay.
Let me stick it in the chat here. And it is a bit obscure. It is not straightforward.
Now, that one I did read where I have to go in and not necessarily it's a jailbreak thing, but it's very...
I'll put it on my screen here.
I've got it here, so...
So what you do is you go into, you open calendar and you find the listing for your Google calendar.
Uh-huh.
And then you select get info from the options menu. And the get info creates this dialogue that's a calendar, a name, the color. And there is a checkbox that you can check that says ignore alerts.
Oh.
See how intuitive that is? There's nothing in this that says don't send me email.
Right.
But ignore alerts will mean the calendar will not send email alert.
Okay, I've got it up so I can do that. Yes.
Yeah.
Thank you.
You're welcome. All right. I like checking things off my to-do list.
Sorry to make it run through 2 weeks.
Hey, has anybody brought their own topics today? I've got a couple we can run through, but I'm happy to hear anybody's. Have we got anything the whole group needs to know?
Bill, are you going to tell about the little dongle thing that you got to improve our ports for the internet?
Yeah.
Bill, show us your dongle.
It's right there.
Yeah, mine's right there.
Anyway, I bought 2 Cuddy wireless adapters from Amazon. I think they were about $15 a piece. And my internet is running very well right now. It's running 150 to 250 Mbps all the time. And I think that's, you know, that's not bad.
I think that's a reasonable speed for Wi-Fi. We haven't had a reason to need to go faster than that.
Oh, there's always a need for speed. Yeah. Cars and internet, cars and computers, they run together.
I guess what I mean is that there are so many different variables in the speed equation that most things are covered at 150 megabits a second.
Yes.
Anywhere you might be going out on the internet is probably going slower than that.
Well, yeah. The thing that I found disappointing when I start playing with it is my ExpressVPN is limited to about 25 to 30 Mbps. Anytime time I turn the VPN on, my speed drops right there. Boom. So
yeah, we talked about that last week, didn't we?
Yes.
That's with LastPass, or I'm sorry, with ExpressVPN.
ExpressVPN. Now, I don't know if anybody's any faster than that.
I think like what I mentioned to you last week is that that would be a selling point, is a VPN provider would be have a price tier that would be based on how much bandwidth you expect to get from it. And so if you were to go out pricing VPNs, you'd be looking at that as an option, and you'd be looking at that pricing tier.
Yeah.
But no, meanwhile, my dongle didn't work, right? Mine still
didn't. This morning, I switched it over to Cheryl's laptop. Like, I had it on the Linux machine, but I switched it over to hers yesterday or the day before. And when she logged on this morning, the wireless adapter wasn't working. I had to switch it back to her machine, the internal adapter. I'm not sure what's going on there. It just wasn't connecting.
Did you try moving it around the USB ports?
No, I did. She was in a panic. You were going to start conversing with us.
Okay.
So I just kicked it back to the original one and left it. She's running off the original at the moment.
Except I disconnected in the middle of the meeting and then reconnected again. So I don't know if I'm connected to it or not.
Well, you're connected to something because we can see you.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, and it looks great. I don't know if this helps or not, but one of the things that I do when I'm working on computers and adding a new USB device is I go around the computer, plugging the device into each USB port. Because Windows, whether it's still based on how sophisticated the driver software is, Windows treats each USB port as a different device connection. And so you could have to go through a software installation at each port that you plug it in at. And so I just go around the laptop, around the desktop, and plug it in. After I've got it installed and working on one, I immediately pull it out and stick it in another and see how easily it sets up if I have to install the software again. If it a really nice installation will recognize the device, set up the software, and if it's a network device like yours, it should remember the password to your Wi-Fi instead of looking at it as a completely separate device, which is what previous versions of Windows always did. You'd move the USB Wi-Fi device and you'd have to set up the password again, the network.
Yeah, well, I'll give it a try when I got a free moment here. Right now...
Go ahead, Bill.
Right now, I'm pretty much concerned with getting what we call the motorhome outside. Our grandson named it Cruz. We asked for a name. He said Cruz. So we have nicknamed it Tomas Cruz. Just so...
You should nickname it what's her name? Damn it,
Pamela.
It was funny for a second. Pamela Cruz. Yeah, name it Pamela. She's much more endearing than Tom.
That we might just have to do that because I never was real comfortable with the male name on a motorhome. It's like a ship. It's got to have a female.
Got to have a female.
It does.
Well, and not a crazy person either.
Well, I'm a firm believer in Scientology. Come on.
Oh yeah, I believe it exists.
Yes.
Act of Scientology. There's no doubt in my mind he's deeply involved in it.
They're very closely related to QAnon.
That's right.
And Flatlanders.
Yeah, Flat Earthers. Well, very cool. I'm looking at some of my follow-ups realizing, I still have not done the Amazon storage follow-up. And I guess that's going to be next week. I've done it again. I've tried to start up the Amazon photo app while we've got all this running, and it doesn't want to start up. Whereas I tried it immediately after last week. Meeting and it started up just fine. So I think next week I'm going to try starting it up before I start the meeting, so it's available in memory.
Okay, so I got an iCloud storage question.
Go on.
And I downloaded, I pushed through all of the photos we have. By the way, we have 500 gigabytes plus of photos.
Oh wow!
That we have accumulated over a long period.
Wow.
Of time. Anyway, so I literally rammed them through onto iCloud, and when I look at my iCloud on the Windows 10 machine, I can see them. I see them all. But when I go to my iPhone, I only see a few of them. I can't search through or flip through all of them. And now a point that's interesting, I did not put them on iPhoto. I put them on iCloud as files. And I find it easier to work with them over there.
Well, unfortunately, if they're not in iPhoto, then they're not going to show up in your phone.
What kind of bullshit is that?
Well, it's not entirely true. I think you have an iCloud drive on your phone, and so you
yes.
can look at them on on your phone as files in a folder. You can probably even open them up individually, but you can't look at them in a gallery or have access to
them in a gallery. I want to look at them as files.
Okay, Bill, but I'm just making the distinction for you.
Yeah, are you? Okay. So, but when I look in the iCloud Drive on my iPhone, I see the main folder, global folders. That's what I downloaded, and it says I have 17 items in there. Well, I know that there's thousands of items here, but 17 files.
So there isn't a folder that says pictures, or you downloaded a folder, right?
I downloaded.
What was the name of the folder?
Well, it's the date 2005-01-01 backgrounds. That's how they're organized. So I can go back by date and look because.
But you're saying they're not there in the drive.
Well, 2005-06-06 is reunion to a reunion pictures as the folder's there, but there's nothing in it. So some of these.
It may take a while. Do you have a refresh on the folder?
No, but
there's no refresh button.
Oh, maybe
because one of the things by using iPhotos, what it does is it creates a thumbnail, a gallery of all the photos that are in your iCloud Drive. Yeah. So they don't reside on your phone to take up space.
No, I know they don't. They reside in the cloud. That's the whole point.
When you're dealing with the iCloud Drive, you're dealing with these items as files and folders. And so I'm not sure what the behavior is when you're dealing with pictures.
Well, I'll figure it out. I mean, it's like I was under pressure at the beginning. I was trying to move these things all over to Google Drive.
Judy looks like she has an insight.
Oh. Don't have to open those folders and move every. You can't just move it as a folder.
You have to select all.
You have to open it up and select them and move them that way.
But you can select all and do them as a bunch.
Yeah, not as a folder.
But when I look at them on my Windows 10 machine in the iDrive, they're there. I see them all, and I'm not connected to my external storage anymore. Mm. So they and there's no way they would all fit on this computer. It says I haven't used hardly any of my space. So they're in the iDrive. It's just I can't see them on the iPhone.
Yeah, they're not being displayed there.
Yes, they're
I'm looking at my iDrive right now. So you can't see one photo, not one photo on your iDrive.
No, I can see some.
Okay,
you can see some.
I think it's got to be a caching issue. I think it's got to have something to do with a synchronizing caching issue.
Okay, well, I'll look through it and see what I'll search through it and do my Google search. Google search my iCloud stuff. There you go.
There you go. Yeah, bring some research back to us. You know what I just did? I just moved a picture to my iCloud Drive on my Windows computer, and I watched the picture disappear. It's not listed. Don't know what that means. Refreshing doesn't make a difference. So there's definitely information to be figured out.
Yes, that's my homework.
The picture went over to my iCloud photos.
iCloud photos.
It's
you
very
moved
strange.
It from where? It went to
I
the
took
photos?
It from I took it from my Windows 10 My Pictures folder. I grabbed a photo from there and I dropped it in my iCloud Drive. It went very quickly.
Yes.
I went to the drive to look and it's not there. It's absolutely blank of that photo. But I went over to the iCloud's photos and there it is.
Where do I find the iCloud photos?
It can be in here. Let me show you. It can be in the sidebar of your Finder, the sidebar of Windows Explorer.
Oh, no, I can find iCloud. It there. Yeah. I can find photos, iPhone photos, and
so this
iCloud
photo part. Right here, this is like a dinner photo. This photo I dropped in iCloud Drive, into iCloud Drive, and it does not list in iCloud Drive. But if I go over to my iCloud photos, it's sitting right here. I didn't put it in here.
Okay,
I'm going to do one more just to make sure I'm not crazy. I'm going to move. Come on, Windows 10. You do it. No, I'll move this duck. This duck is going in iCloud Drive. Very quickly, move to iCloud Drive. All right, I did screw it up. I must have screwed it up the first time.
Okay, because what I see on my Windows 10 machine in iCloud Drive, all those pictures that I pulled over into it are there.
They're there. Okay.
When I look
at... I'm sorry. Forget all of that for the last 2 minutes. I obviously made a mistake. Just disregard that. You can skip over that if you're watching the YouTube.
Okay. So what I'm assuming is when I look in my file server over a file folder over on the phone, they should show up because it is the iCloud folder. It's the iCloud folders. What's in there?
Okay. Well,
go ahead. I'll play with it. I'll play with it.
Yeah. Tomorrow. Yeah. It sounds like there's more to be learned about how that works. I expected if it's a folder or a file in iCloud Drive, you should be able to find it in your iCloud Drive app on your phone. So actually the next thing I should probably check. But I'm not going to do that right. I did bring a couple of topics myself. One was suggested by Richard. I thought it was pretty good, a cool idea. I read through the article. This is a reminder that Amazon is starting this sidewalk service. You guys might have seen some news on it. The sidewalk service from Amazon. We talked about it a number of months ago. This is where Amazon is taking selected devices to create a mesh network off of your internet connection. And there's a lot of controversy right now because folks aren't really understanding what's going on. But they're basically saying that doorbell that you have or that security camera that you have hanging off of the side of your house can also be a Wi-Fi pocket. It can provide discrete Wi-Fi for devices within range. This is the reason Judy's situation kind of reminded me of it. If they have, maybe in its final form, Judy wouldn't have lost internet because she had enough Amazon devices in her world to create an internet from her neighbor. But the idea here is that you have internet, you have Amazon devices. Those devices can act as hotspots using a proprietary system, and it creates this mesh network across Amazon services. Right now, only available in the United States. It's going to be turned on in a week. We'll be having our next meeting on the 8th. That's the day it goes live, and you are automatically opted into it. So that's where all the controversy is coming from right now. This sidewalk idea is the idea of discrete internet being available, regardless of whether I have four devices within range, regardless of whether they have internet service or not. Those devices get their connection by your Amazon device providing them with some internet. Security experts have gone through their white paper. People I respect have said this doesn't look like a security problem yet, but it is. You have opened up another vector, so we're not going to see the real security problems until this stuff starts coming into existence. But at the moment, the way they plan on implementing it, it does not look like a major security problem from a technical standpoint. This network, I'll stick this link in. Ars Technica wrote an article on it that I think may be a little judgmental, calls Amazon customers guinea pigs in a potential security problem. But it references the Amazon Sidewalk webpage explaining how it works, what it would be used for. And one of the things that I've just stuck that in the chat, one of the things that I think is a very easy answer for this that was mentioned in this article or something else I saw earlier is that Apple has come out with these AirTags. We talked about them a little bit. These AirTags that you can connect to luggages or laptop bags or whatever. And they use the Find My network from Apple to discover these devices. And the way they work is, say you left your laptop bag on the subway and you're trying to track it down, you could go to your iPhone and go into Find My, and every iPhone that has come across your bag would ping the service saying, this bag is here, this bag is here. And so you could use other people's devices to track down your lost AirTag, whatever it might be attached. Maybe it's attached to your wife. I don't know. But you can figure out where this item is. That is overnight an amazing accomplishment for Apple. They put out these AirTag devices and they've got one of the largest lost and found networks on the planet. And it just gets turned on overnight. It doesn't need to be built. It's already built. All they've done is made finding stuff part of their infrastructure. If you have an iDevice that has Bluetooth, that has Wi-Fi, then you can see one of these AirTags and report its location back. In my example of leaving a laptop bag on a subway, you can imagine how many iPhones that bag might come in contact with on its journey around the circuit. It would you'd be tracking your bag all as it's going through the city. Part of the upgrade they made to it is if you've got some of the later devices, I think it's iPhone 11 and newer, you can use the system to track you within feet to your device or to your AirTag. All this background is just to say they've killed the competition when they did this. Tile is a well well-known tracker tag. They've been building their own infrastructure for a while now, simply through word of mouth, customers installing the app. The way Tile works is you install the app in your phone, you put the tracker on your thing, your devices, your laptop bag, your luggage, your wife, your boyfriend, whatever it is, and you're hoping that that Tile comes in contact with another Tile owner, and they have their Tile software on and running, and so you can imagine the network to find your stuff is much slimmer. The path to using this stuff is much higher. You have to be a Tile owner. You have to have the software installed. It has to be running properly in your device. It's dependent on Android or Apple devices that have the Tile app installed. What Apple did was it turned its entire collection of Apple users into a Find My network. So overnight, they flipped a switch, and it's the biggest Find network that's ever existed. Tile can't compete with that. Tile is going to die. But Tile could make a deal with Amazon to use their Sidewalk network. This gives Tile the ability to compete against Apple, because so many people have Ring devices on their houses. They have doorbells and security cameras and security lights that will be turned on to the Sidewalk network, so that when somebody who stole their bag is running down the street, somebody's doorbell is reporting a ping back on that Tile. If your dog is lost, it goes walking down it goes to the cul-de-sac and down the street, it gets pinged by the Ring doorbell on your friend's house. Actually, it doesn't have to be a friend, your stranger's house. The point is that this separate mesh network is sectioned off by Amazon to be used for these kinds of activities. And it should be kept sandboxed and apart from the internet connection that you're currently on. They also, in their white papers, say that the maximum amount of bandwidth that will come off of these, they're called Sidewalk bridges, would be 80 kilobits a second. So if you're worried about somebody else's activity out there sucking up all your internet, they've put a limiter on it to 80 kilobits a second. That's not even enough to watch a movie. You can barely have a phone conversation with that. But that's not true. You could have a good phone conversation with that, but you can't have like a FaceTime conversation with it. You can't. All right. I'm not going to get into the semantics. I'm just trying to use analogies to give you an idea of what's going on. Maybe a better way to put it is, if you're watching Netflix, you're using about 4 megabits a second, or 4,096 kilobits a second for that Netflix movie. And what they're talking about slicing off of your internet is 80 kilobits a second, to give you some distinction in the amount of weight. I don't want to say it couldn't be used for video, because one of their sides is, if you have a video camera out there and you've lost internet connection, that video camera could indiscriminately just get connected to the Sidewalk network because your neighbor has a Ring doorbell. And so for that time period that your power is out, your video camera might be getting access from your neighbor, if that makes sense. I bring it up. I've given you the link. You can read about it yourself. Ours does a really one-sided article on it, trying to really scare you into this idea. I think the fear might be justified, but not for the reasons they say. I think the fear should be encroachment, as these services, we've seen encroachment on services. I don't know if you know what I'm talking about, but I'll explain. We've seen encroachment on services in the form of letting people use your Wi-Fi, like an internet provider that is opening up your Wi-Fi on a separate guest network. I think AT&T does this now, where if you've got their router, there's a guest Wi-Fi pocket that hangs off of it, and that's for AT&T customers to be able to get connected to Wi-Fi when they're in an area where AT&T hasn't provided service. They also have done Wi-Fi calling. You've probably seen this with your cell phones. That's a form of encroachment. They won't provide you with a cell in your area. You're complaining about lousy cell phone coverage, so they've added cell phone coverage through your Wi-Fi access. So whatever, you're footing the bill for your internet connection, and you're also paying for your cell phone bill, and it's using your internet connection to provide you with your cell phone service. So that's another source of data encroach. I think that's something to be concerned. I don't think we should be numb to that. I think we should all be aware of that. I mean, that's really what Amazon's asking. It's saying, hey, you're an Amazon customer, use Amazon devices. We like our Sidewalk idea, and we're going to opt you into it, and you're going to give up 80K of your bandwidth. And I just don't I think that as we go forward with these concepts, they should be on the up and up. They should be full disclosure, transparency, education of what's going on. And this idea of encroaching on your data without you knowing, I find a reason to be fearful. Not the security risks that come along with it, because so far it doesn't look like that's a real issue. But this idea that you're becoming numb to the way your services that you pay for get used around. Does anybody have any questions on what I'm talking about? Have been hearing this plan that's coming up? Cheryl, you got something?
Didn't know about the plan. We have AT&T US cell phones that mm-hmm. piggyback on whatever, use the networks that are here in Canada. But I also have a new mobile cell phone provider, which is my cable TV internet home phone, Shaw, who recently has been bought out by an Eastern mega communications network thing. And I don't know what's going to come with my Shaw mobile bill, which basically is just added on. I don't pay anything for it, for calls and everything, but I have the option to buy data at such and such an amount. I get into another little issue because this is an Android Samsung phone that is the only one that's compatible with a couple of apps that I have. For example, reading my blood sugar monitor. I can't do that with my Apple 6S. They want me to have a newer Apple. So I keep my Android system for specific apps, but I don't want to have another bill every month for data. So I'm hoping that it can keep being used with the Wi-Fi in the house, the Wi-Fi hotspots across wherever.
Sure. The point I was trying to make, and people do it down here all the time. They have an AT&T phone that supports Wi-Fi calling, and they get down here and they've got lousy AT&T coverage wherever they're living. And so they just use the Wi-Fi in their home to do their AT&T cell call.
That's exactly what I use in Mexico and here in Colorado Springs.
Because you got lousy coverage in both locations.
So if I'm using my AT&T phone on Wi-Fi
with wireless
calling
as one of the options. Wireless calling is one of the options, or Wi-Fi calling.
So Wi-Fi calling is an option on my iPhone. Don't know.
Yeah, it's dependent both on your equipment and your contract.
Yes, and I know that for a set amount a month, I can make my iPhone with AT&T into a hotspot. No?
Yeah, so that's a whole different deal. And I was really using this as an example of my idea of encroaching on your data, because AT&T and you don't have any relationship other than you've decided to use them for cell phone. But because they've provided you with lousy service wherever you are, they're going, why don't you use your own internet? You're still paying the exact same bill, but you're using your internet to make the phone call. And that's concept. I think the fear in this article is justified, but I don't think it's justified for the reasons they're trying to scare you.
Yeah.
I think what's scary is being numb to what's happening around us. The idea that Amazon is making an assumption you have enough internet that you'd share it with Amazon. You're already paying for Prime. You're already buying their devices. They're your big... I mean, it's kind of like Amazon not paying taxes. It's kind of like, wow, how can you have so much power and you're still requiring me to have internet for your system to work? Maybe this will all flip up on its end. Maybe we'll start seeing services like Sidewalk as a side internet business. Maybe there'll be key areas in neighborhoods where Amazon needs your bandwidth, provide what they're trying to provide. Maybe they'll approach you and go, you've got a fiber optic connection. What if we just pay your internet connection and you leave it open for our services?
Sure, that'll happen.
who knows? Who really knows? But I do find it fascinating. And I think the other point that's very important in this respect is you're getting opted into it. And they're doing it because they know you wouldn't opt in yourself to share your internet with strangers and strange services. And so they are turning it on for you. And if you're not interested in it, you have to go and manually turn it off.
But this is only if you use those Amazon devices, right?
That's right. This is on select devices that support Sidewalk Bridge.
I think that is an invasion, that you're automatically opted in. You should not be opted in unless you so choose.
Yeah, I agree. The problem with not being opted in is that it would be the same model that just happened with Apple, where they set the permissions to be tracked. They say they ask the question, do you want to be tracked? Nobody wants to be tracked. They say no. We end up with 96% of people not being tracked. And we have this whole discourse going on right now. Oh, they've killed my business. Facebook's advertising business is gone. They've only done it because they're competition. And now they're the only advertiser. Back and forth, we've got this silly thing going on. The opt-in thing, though, that's exactly what Amazon's afraid of. If they'd ask you, can we use a little bit of your internet for Sidewalk? You'd be like, no, I don't want you to use my internet.
Exactly. You need to pay me if you want something.
Give me a discount. Discount my Prime and you can use it.
Exactly.
Yeah. And so I don't think it's a security issue to be scared of yet. We haven't seen yet where it's going to be a compromisable position. However, it is a surface. If it wasn't there, it wouldn't be a potential risk. But we don't see, nobody's exploited that risk yet to show it to us what that risk is. So I think the real things to be afraid of is being numb to this stuff that's going on, and this idea of opt-in instead, auto opt-in, default auto opt-in instead of default auto opt-out.
We went through this same thing in Canada over TV access on Cablevision, and they outlawed that procedure where you're automatically in, you have to opt out. Sick bird, illegal.
I think that's a great idea. I think that we should have an opt-out resolution in the United States where it's illegal to automatically include you in any business practice that you're not aware of.
I thought that was already in effect for some reason.
You know, as it's coming out of my mouth, I'm imagining there's probably legislation that you can weasel around because of technology, because you probably did see something. Mm-hmm. You probably did agree to a terms of service that 10 years later, they can do this to you without worrying about legal repercussions. So what we need is some well thought out technical regulation instead of some general, you can't be opted in. It would have to be something very specific. You know, I brainstorm this stuff. I'm not a politician. I don't know how to deal with this stuff, but it seems like we should be thinking about that kind of stuff. It should not be easy for you to be opt in.
Exactly.
And I consequently, I love what Apple did, but I think their motivations aren't as much altruistic as it is they were getting killed in the advertising business. Nobody likes advertising. By doing this, we'll be the only advertisers.
No, you're looking at that all wrong. They had our best in at heart.
Right.
And who won the election?
Well, there it is in a nutshell. Read all about it at that link. I'll put it on today's meeting if you want to revisit this topic. Yeah. Does anybody have anything else to add? I was going to say, I went around all my Amazon devices. I currently have 2 Echo devices and a Fire TV 4K. And I did not find a Sidewalk option on any of those devices. So I suspect that they're going to be branded as Sidewalk Bridge, and they're going to be on specifically things that face externally, like cameras, floodlights, light bulbs, and doorbells. I think that's where you're going to see this option. And each device, you'll see in the article, each device you need to go to and opt out of. So you go into your Amazon app, you go look for the security camera, you go into the settings of the security camera, you look down to the Sidewalk option, and then you choose not to be part of that to opt out. I got another topic for Windows 10 people, a real quick one. I'm going to switch over to present. In Windows 10, have you guys gotten the weather news toolbar at the bottom here? See this down here? This 88 degrees Fahrenheit, sunny.
Yeah.
How do I do that?
This is one of the latest things that's come on Windows 10. It's the news and interests add-on. And I would have talked about it last week because it came on the computer right next to me, this ancient Lenovo that Linda turned me on to. It just appeared. I didn't do anything special to install it, and that was what I was hearing on the internet, was that this option is just appearing on Windows computers, and actually it was just appearing on older installations of Windows 10 instead of on the newest. I've got the latest version, and it hadn't appeared until this week. It actually didn't appear until I installed an update. This is news and current events with weather. I'll pop it up again. It gives you a summary. It's the summary is from a page that manages your interests. You choose things like technology, business. So I clicked on manage my interests. And so this is what my interests look like. News, everything with a blue X in it, I've checked. Science, technology, U.S. news, sports, entrepreneurship. I mean, you can see these are all different topics. You put a blue check in it and it affects what comes up here as a summary of news. Any of these things are clickable. You can click on it. It should take the article or the weather report or whatever it might
be. How did you get there? Like you found that on your toolbar, but...
Okay, so here's the thing. It is not on your toolbar until it's on your toolbar.
Right.
So it's either going to appear for you or you're going to have to go after trying to get it installed. What I can tell you is if you wait long enough, it'll install itself. But
what did you call it? Like if I was going to search for it and try to put it on myself.
Hey, Scott.
Yeah.
On the search bar, just type in news and interest and it'll bring you to a page that tells you where it is and how to install it.
Oh, thank you. What I was going to give you is KB5003214. It's an optional update.
Ouch.
If you Google that, but your method is probably just as effective. KB5003214. I put that is a knowledge base number for an update in Microsoft, and you should be able to visually see this in Windows Updates page. You go into Windows Updates in Windows 10, it should be listed there under Updates without clicking on anything. It should say Windows Updates. It'll say something like, you're all up to date. Right below that, it'll say optional quality updates available. And it'll have that listed as one of the optional quality updates. Now, what's been funny is that the computer next to me got it installed without that, because apparently it doesn't have to be installed by that update. It could be installed in a dozen different updates that Microsoft has provided recently. But if you still don't have it, this is the way I got it into my computer that we're looking at. I installed that update and it came along with it. There are changes in the program with that update. So if you haven't gotten it installed, by installing that update, you're telling it to install the software, and those new changes come with it.
Okay.
Now, maybe the most important thing for you in the future is that if you go to the taskbar and you click with the right mouse button, it'll bring up the right mouse button context menu, and you'll see after you have this installed a news and interests section. I don't know if you can see that on my screen right now. The news and interests section controls how the icon shows up on your screen on the taskbar. And this might be your favorite feature, turning it off. I only say that because you may not get any value out of it. In fact, since I've been using it, I find it fun that it's there, but every so often I've got it just in my face. In fact, the latest update to this application is to add an option to not open when you hover, because all I'm doing is I'm putting my cursor on top of it and it's opening up the window. Now, my cursor might have just floated down there because of something I was doing. I may not want this popping up in front of what I'm doing. And so in the settings, you can set it. Honestly, I haven't looked for the setting yet, so I'm not certain about it. So anyway, that's how you can turn it on and off after it's installed. This is also how you can get it installed if you don't already have it installed. And I feel like I had a third thing and it slipped my mind. Any questions? I know what the third thing was. The third thing is, if you don't do anything, eventually it's going to install itself anyway. One of the things that I think is very cool with it is this summary that I can look at and I can click on, and it takes me directly to the article. I've been using the Windows 10 News app. Here it is right here as a live tile. And it shows me an article there. It goes through, it does like this round robin. There's one there. It says DeSantis signs controversial bill banning transgender ellipsis. I'm like, oh, wait, I want to read that. If I click on it, good luck finding the article. In fact, hopefully I remember the words in the title, because 9 times out of 10, it's not on the home page. And I have to use this search up here. It's taking forever to come up again right now. But I guess the point I'm making is it doesn't take you to that article. Yeah, in fact, here, this is what I'm getting. So what brought me into this app was a headline I wanted to read. And now I'm in the app and I don't see the headline to save my life. It's not here. So that's infuriating. It's the only reason I opened the app is because I read that headline. And hopefully I remembered the wording of the headline, and I can go up here, Santa signs something, signs, maybe it's Signsville. I can't tell you how many times I've done this, because it caught out of the corner of my eye an article I wanted to read, and I clicked on the app immediately and then couldn't find what I was looking. Here it is. This has got to be it. Signed, seventh state to ban transgender. Well, it's not even, yeah, it's not even the same headline. This is the same headline. Signs controversial bill banning transgender. So that must have been the one that was put up in that app. I find this infuriating. So I like this change in concept where I can get a peekaboo of headlines and go directly to anything that's interest has interest to me. And that's all I got. I hope that was worth it. I hope that was worth showing up on Tuesday.
That is cool.
Not just available on the Apple, it. Cheryl. Yeah. You can hold that against Judy. You can't get that on a Macintosh.
It seems to me I have a bunch of things on the Apple. But anyways, so are we doing recommendations now?
If you'd like, if anybody else doesn't have any news or tech to share with us, we could go on to some recommendations.
Well, before we start them, I want to say that I like your Goodreads and knowing that they're all in that one place. And the movies and the TV series, I'm amazed like you are that how many we've actually put in there since we started doing this portion of the computer club. And it's nice that it's all right there. It seems to be a strange organization thing. I don't know if it's most recent. I don't know how it's organized, but just an aside. So
I think the default is by general rating.
Oh, okay.
I think the default, and if you look on that list on that screen, there's some ways to sort it. But you're right, the granular kind of sorting that you might want to find, like British cop shows. I don't think you can get out of track unless you get an account and pay for it.
I don't think I can do any sorting because it's your page. I'm just an observer. Oh, maybe. Oh, it's by rank. You're right. It is over.
Yeah,
there.
You can do some basic sorting.
I can do recently added. I can do rank. I can do title. Okay, so now I found it. Thank you.
I'm lost. Yeah. What are you talking about?
Oh, well, what I was presenting earlier, Judy, I don't know if you were with us, but if you go to the website, I've added links for our recommendations to services. I'll bring it back up again.
It's in the chat. It's the third. Let's see.
If you go to sccclub.org, and then if you're looking,
and what it did at your website was it opened two more windows. So one opened with the Goodread, and then I had to go back to your original one. Another one opened with the other. So I've got like four things open right now. But the shows comes open in a window, and the movies.
Are you seeing this on my screen, Judy? Do you see this?
Yes, I am.
So I created a recommended list, and so I've segregated the movies into one list and the shows into another list, and it's just amazing how many things. There's 74 movies here that we've talked about in Club, and what Cheryl's talking about is you've got some basic sorting here that you can do. So you can vote by popularity. Sort by popularity or longest to shortest or when they were released or when they were added to this list, which may have some intelligence to it, depending on when I got it on the list. And ranking as well. Ranking is the default. Ranking, I think this is from, I think ranking is from AllTrack, like anybody that's bothered to review and rank this movie. I think that's what we're looking at here, is the numbers that's given by Track members. But then, like I was saying to Cheryl, one of the things that Track is selling you, if you pay a subscription fee, I think is this more granular kind of sorting. So you could group all the British cop shows together, or all the New Zealand mythic shows out there, all the Tolkien stuff together. I think you'd have those kinds of possibilities if you were using this software with a paid account. But it's not the perfect solution. Now, none of this is. In fact, Judy or Cheryl was helping me with the Goodreads thing, just testing what I was doing. And that damn list disappeared twice. It just, something about Goodreads. And so this isn't even the original list we were looking at, Cheryl. This is a shelf. The list was created by Listopia, and I think it's a separate service that is not reliable. Whereas a shelf, I'm able to leave them there. And this has been consistent. And so you can go to this shelf and see all the different books that we've talked about as well. If anybody comes up with a better solution, please let me know. I would love to be able to granularly sort the movies and sort the TV shows. I would love to come to the track list and go, we were talking about some sci-fi police show in New Zealand. What was it? Can't remember the title.
Cool. Anyways, last week, and on that list, James, as in James and Carolyn, I see he's not at his computer right now. Darn. But anyways, he had listed a couple of them, and I binged a few of them. The Ladies in Black, the Australian movie. It was really, really good. I quite enjoyed it, and I would recommend it. Love Song for Bobby Long. I made a mess of this one. I shared it on Netflix and on Facebook, and I said, what an awesome thing. And I called it Love Song for Bobby Love. And then somebody else said, well, I don't think it's Bobby Love. I think it's Bobby Long. And I said, oh, okay. Yeah, I got it right. And I said, Jack Flash was just an awesome actor in it. Well, it wasn't him. It was somebody else, or Chris Rock. And I called it the wrong actor. I called it the wrong title. And then another one, Upstart. I called it Upstart, but it's actually Upside. So I was making a mess out of all my recommendations. So I'll try again. Upside, The Upside. It's got Kevin Hart as a very comedic role. Nicole Kidman is in there. And I don't know the guy's name, but it's based on a true thing that happened where a guy is a quadriplegic and he hires an ex-con basically on parole to help him. And then the ex-con ends up being a businessman related to handicapped assistance people. I also watched an older movie from 2005 called Sahara. Matthew McConaughey and Scarlett Johansson, I think, are in it. Sahara?
Do you recommend it?
I thought it was a fun type little blow up everything and be concerned about the river in Africa, but not really. And yeah, it was a fun escape.
Okay.
And then the third one I'm going to recommend this week is Blue Miracle. And it is a story about Cabo San Lucas, and a true story, based on a true story, of a man that's helping the street kids, the orphans, and giving them a home. And it was really bugging me, who is this sailor? Who is the guy that's playing this rough? It's Dennis Quaid. I finally found out at the credits at the end. But yeah, Dennis Quaid. And a nice, fun, awesome week of binge butt, but it was a good one. So Carolyn and James, thank you for your recommends. I really enjoyed them.
I gotta say, I have never heard of Love Song for Bobby Long. When you mentioned it last week, Jim, you made an offhanded remark, oh, everybody's seen this movie, and I didn't even know what movie you were talking about. I still haven't had a chance to watch it, but I like that Cheryl enjoyed it. I'm probably gonna put it on my list.
It makes you shake your head a bit, and I don't know that, Scott, you want your girls to watch it with you, but it might be something for you and you get to check out.
And Blue Miracle, we've been seeing that marketed all over the place. We've been waiting for an opportunity to watch it with the kids. Just felt like it was we live in San Carlos and my kids are half Latino. I thought it would be an appropriate story for us.
I think that the family will enjoy it. I really liked it. Yeah. Maybe
have we got it?
Your daughter that went and saw the big ship. She's not maybe so ready to go out on another boat that you might want to give her a week or two before you show her the Blue Miracle.
That's right. I'll give her a little bit of time, get her land leg back.
But she can feel for the ones that are puking over the edge, you know.
Well, she can find it funny instead of sympathizing, like, oh, I remember that. Yeah. Well, have we got any other recommendations for today? Somebody else like to chime in?
Yeah, I saw one on Netflix that I liked. It's a series called The Comiskey Method.
Oh, yeah.
That's terrific.
Mike Douglas and Alan Arkin exchanging quips at each other, backhanded compliments and little insults. I understand, though, that Alan Arkin is only in for the first two seasons, and I'm halfway through the first season.
Well, I binge-butted that one this week because I had watched the first season a long time ago, but this week I watched the second season, I think all in one night. But anyways, so when you say you're halfway through the first series, the second series is post-season. death.
It's binge worthy, isn't it? It's
definitely binge worthy.
Somebody recommended it in our group a couple of months ago, I think, and yeah. Yui and I started watching it, and we just couldn't get off the couch. We just rolled one into another, into another, into another.
Well, Scott, that gives you a good feeling what it's like to be our age.
Yeah. My kids and I were joking about, I was watching Star Trek on Netflix and I fell asleep on the couch and my daughter woke me up and said, "Hey, Netflix is checking to see if you died." You've been here for 23 episodes. Are you sure you're still alive?
Well, it often asks you, you know, are you still watching? If you don't, you know, hit the button to go on to the next series and hit the button to skip the intro. You have to do these things. You have to keep the remote active or else it does. It asks you after it goes through one, you know, half hour show or whatever it is. It will automatically go on to the next, but it won't go to the third until you wake up.
Right. I mean, that's actually a nice feature, especially if you're somebody that's limited by your bandwidth. You know, I've constantly referenced our internet provider in Alaska, and there's a bandwidth cap. And if you were to just turn on 4K Netflix and leave the house, if it continued to roll,
yeah.
you could use up all your monthly internet in that weekend.
Yeah, that's crazy. So the Kaminsky one, yeah, I forgot about that. But I also watched season two of Who Killed Sarah, which is the one I recommended a while back about a Mexican cartel family. And it's gotten a little bit, it's one of those where I'm addicted now and I hate
it. Telenovela. You're watching a soap opera with special effects.
Yeah, it is a soap opera and it's always translated. You know, you can watch it in Spanish or you can watch it in English, but it's just dubbed over. So you can see that the English is not exactly what they're saying. And it's kind of stilted a little bit, but the second season, even more so than the first, but it's kind of a different one.
You know, some of those bad dubs remind me of the old cartoons that we used to get from Japan. We had some distributors when I was growing up, like in the 70s. I didn't understand it at the time, but I understand it now after watching some of the history of some of this stuff. And I watched TV shows like Star Blazers and what was another one that I watched a lot of? They were these anime programs that came from Japan. And what I learned as an adult is these producers in the United States would buy them in bulk. They would buy all this video in bulk and then they would just cut them together. And I remember this as a child. You'd be watching one program and all of a sudden you would see characters from another program or you'd see robots from another program or vehicles from another program just show up. And not only would they interlace different things together to make an American comic, a cartoon, but then they would dub it over with their own message, their own story. So many times the story you're being told wasn't the story that was originally intended for these cartoons. Now, in the end, it doesn't really matter because the cartoons were always made to sell toys in Japan. And so whatever the story was, you're selling a toy. And that was the big difference when they came into the U.S. market was they didn't have a toy to sell. They were trying to sell content to the TV networks. And so they would just cut them up. They do all kinds of weird stuff to these cartoons. I wish I could remember the name of another one, but there are a handful of these programs I grew up watching kid and didn't understand until I was older that the story that I know was an American told story that used characters from a dozen different cartoons. Maybe that's what we're going to find out with Killing of Sarah, is that it was such a bad telenovela that they had some American producer give you better dialogue.
I usually end my evening by watching World Poker Tour for about an hour.
What was that, Paul?
I usually end each evening by watching World Poker Tour for about an hour. That's on Tubi.
I haven't used Tubi at all. How do you use Tubi?
Just started using it because
it's free, right?
Yeah, it is free.
You need an account.
It's got some commercials.
It has commercials
on my Roku TV, but there's so many of those things, you know, like I could watch so many different things. I'm trying to limit myself so I can actually know what I'm doing. Yeah,
there's been some real releases on Tubi, though. There are some shows out there now you can't watch unless you're on Tubi. Well, that's not necessarily true. This is the Computer Club. But they are being released for Tubi, like being released for Hulu.
Well, Amazon and some other things. No, I'm in Mexico and won't transmit. So I asked you about fixing my Amazon stick to be in the United States, but the first instruction kind of scared me. It said, first, hijack your Amazon Fire Stick. And then it just went to the next instruction, and I thought, wait a minute.
It's sensationalized language. They probably said jailbreak. Jailbreak your Amazon stick.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, that's the...
That was just as scary, you know.
But on an Amazon stick, that requires nothing more than going into the settings and flipping a switch. You go into the settings and there is this option under security that
in jail,
is stopping...
No.
Well, what it's doing is it's an Amazon stick by default won't allow you to install anything that doesn't come from Amazon.
Oh, I see.
And so there's a security option in your settings to install from unknown sources.
Oh, if you want to take the risk, huh?
That's right. And it's just an on or off switch. And the truth is, you've made those kinds of decisions the entire time you've owned a Windows computer.
Sure.
This idea of secure sources for software started popping up when we started having these mobile computers. Along with that came the concept of an app store. And along with the app store came this concept of a secure source for your software. We never used to worry about it. We used to download stuff all the time and run it without being worried it had a virus or being worried that it was some, you know, unscrupulous piece of software meant to take advantage of your computer. We never worried. I mean, we worried about checking for viruses, but we never worried about going to the website and downloading the software to run it. That's where this concept comes from, are these app stores. The idea that they keep you in the app store, and what they're selling you by keeping you in the app store is they're selling you security. They vetted the software. They've made sure it's secure. They made sure that it works well on your device. But that's it, Paul.
And
jailbreaking under other devices could be like if you went to jailbreak an iPhone, that requires changing firmware and installing stuff and putting it into a mode that it can be compromised by software that's from outside the Apple Store. I would never recommend anybody in this group to worry about jailbreak an iDevice.
And then when people were loading apps and they were kind of worried about what was going to happen to their data or things that were in the computer, then they just wrote those terms of usage so long and so infiltrated with legalese that people will never read them.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm still waiting. I've said for 20 years that I think the way they write terms of service is a legal defense in itself. And I think that we will continue to move forward into a world where it's either going to have to become much more straightforward, or we're going to find ourselves in court going, who reads this? All I understand is if I say no, I can't use the application. I still believe that's what's, we're going to watch this all, just like what happened during the Obama era, and they redefined the way a credit card contract could be written. They literally could not use small print any longer. It literally had to fit on a section of page. It had to be written in words that are less than three syllables. All of that got regulated. And I think that we're going to see a self-regulation of terms of service coming up to fight against a legal argument that we're going to be able to make these terms of service are ridiculous.
Yeah.
But I'm sure the terms of service on Amazon are what protect them from just opting you in to Sidewalk. I'm sure we have clicked some button that has said, oh yeah, they can do this. It can be interpreted as this is okay to do, even though this didn't exist back when you said it was okay.
Oh yeah.
Are you out of here, Judy? Until next week.
We have to get out of here too. Gotta go register Tomas.
Well, this is probably a good time to start shutting this down. I didn't have any recommendations this. Well, okay, I got one. You know I got one. I watched the zombie movie. It was awesome. The Army of the Dead by Zack Snyder, the Zack Snyder release of a zombie film. It was awesome. We had a lot of fun watching it. It was only soured by brief moments of drama between characters. Way too much time on character development. We should have just seen a lot more zombie action. If you watch it, Jim, you'll know what I'm talking about. It was a fun romp until all of a sudden we have to discuss our feelings. There's no reason to get into any of that garbage. There's too much going on in this movie to worry about a father-daughter relationship.
Character and zombie. I don't, you know.
Who needs character development when you've got a zombie army that has infiltrated Las Vegas? And just like a Zack Snyder release, there is so much going on in this movie that you could spend hours on YouTube afterwards analyzing what you just watched, because he stuck so much stuff in it. He's about to start a whole zombie extended universe on Netflix. It's so obvious. What's already slated is an animated series that is the prequel to this movie that tells the backstory. And in this movie, you come from Area 51. There's subtle hints of robot zombies. There's a zombie birth. There's different levels of zombies in this. In fact, what was really interesting about this movie was some of these movies, like they feed on each other, right? Like this movie is telling the story after the last movie. And this movie is kind of done that way. It's kind of done like the sequel, but there is no prequel. And so they spend like the first 20 minutes, 30 minutes of character development is just like providing the backstory of the movie before this movie you never saw, because it doesn't exist. So it was a real interesting way to introduce the story. Like all of a sudden there's this group of zombie killers. You've never heard of them, but this is all the action that they did in the previous story that doesn't exist. Maybe it'll be in the animated series that's about to come out that's supposed to be a prequel to it. It's a lot. So I recommend Army of the Dead. If you're looking for a good, up-to-date zombie flick, this is it.
With the family, because they seem to like zombie movies. They had those car figures on the back of one vehicle. You know, you have the mom, the dad, all of them, all five of them were zombies, even the dog. So, yeah. So, I'll share it with the kids.
Yeah.
Next week.
Okay, Cheryl, we'll see you later. Okay, and I can recommend one more movie. As far as... Oh, do you have one, Jim? I won't speak out of turn. Oh.
I'm waiting for yours.
Oh, okay. I got one more that I never thought I was going to watch. But the other day I was working on something and I'm like, I want something in the background. I'll put this. I watched the last Rambo movie.
Oh.
The last Rambo movie where he's retirement-y. He should be in San Carlos on the beach. He shouldn't be fighting Mexican drug cartels, but that's what he's doing. And the first half of the movie, I didn't think I would like this. In fact, I think I really like the First Blood movie. The very first one I thought was an excellent movie. Everything after that was very sensationalized stuff. It was done for the action. It was done for the violence. And there is definitely plenty of action and violence in the movie. But I kind of got into this movie because his story arc is ending with him living retired on a farm with the mother of I think it's his brother's dead wife and his niece. And his niece is trying to find her real father because she was abandoned by her real father. It's his brother's, his dead brother's wife, their child from another relationship. I think I've got that straight. And it's they're Latinos. And so there's a lot of Spanish in it. There's a lot of Mexican culture that's going on. And she actually, the storyline is that she goes to Mexico to find her real father. And while there, gets in trouble with some drug cartels that are trafficking girls, and she ends up trafficked, and he comes after her. And so the first half is learning all this about him. I'm trying not to spoil it because there's some really fun stuff in it. I think I enjoyed the last half better though, because he literally goes to Mexico killing people left and right, trying to find his niece, finds her, tragic, angry, goes back and kind of invites them to come get him. And so he invites this drug cartel, basically, through his actions, to come back onto his farm property. And there, the movie turns into an R-rated Home Alone movie, where Stallone is just behind a corner, up a stairs, in a tunnel, and he's hitting a button or he's shooting down the way. But every time a bad guy pops out, there's some ingenious trap that has killed him merciless. And so the whole second half of the movie, I'm like, this is like Home Alone. Guys come running in, falling into trap.
A grown-up Home Alone.
A grown-up Home Alone movie is what it felt like, the last half. This is called Last Blood. Are you out here, Fred? We'll see you next week.
Okay, see you next week. Have a good week.
Well, that's the end of my ridiculous recommendations.
Well, it sounds like that movie like that would scare a lot of North Americans out of Mexico. Anyway.
Which would be a good thing. I saw a movie similar. It was called Man on Fire. Did you ever see that?
It sounds familiar. I'm trying to remember what it is.
Is
it Denzel Washington?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he's a heavy personality that comes down to Mexico to be a bodyguard for a family. And the daughter gets kidnapped and he goes to rescue her.
Yeah, yeah. I that's a much more intelligent film than this one. but I can't say I didn't like the movie. I found myself really into the it is shameless, gratuitous, violent, like you've known from all those First Blood movies. It is totally there. And when somebody gets his head chopped off, the head is right there. The blood is dripping. It is
oh, yuck.
I mean, it is. But I can't say I didn't. I can't say that I didn't enjoy it. I enjoyed the Latino part of it. I enjoyed the premise of what was going on. I did think it was kind of silly that a guy that's almost my dad's age is running around taking out 20 armed drug cartel guys. But then you kind of had some satisfaction with it too. I mean, he does have this Vietnam vet background, and he's kept himself in shape and, you know, up to date. Paul, would you recommend Man on Fire? I think I would, if I remember it correctly.
Yeah, it is.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
But for comedy, I'm watching Netflix comedy specials. My favorite guy is Bill Burr.
Oh, yeah.
He's
So you've been watching his Netflix comedy special.
Yeah, yeah. He's a curmudgeon, you know. He's bitter about everything, but he's very funny.
Yeah, even more so now. He can't say anything without getting in trouble.
Well, yeah, but he said he got an email, from somebody saying, please don't do anything bad with women because we want you to keep working. We love you so much.
That's great. We don't want to hear any Weinstein stories from you, man, because you're doing a great job.
Well, there are a bunch of comedians, you know, that the Me Too people have backtracked them for 50 years or something like that and put them out of work.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, that's all part of this cancel culture stuff we've talked about
cancel
before. I sure shake my head often at it because there are things that are wrong and should be changed. I just have trouble. Any given instant, it's difficult to decide whether that was the appropriate way to deal with it or not. I definitely think the Weinstein thing was completely appropriate to deal with it in that manner. But the, what's his name? Louis. The Louis character that totally owned what he did.
Louis C.K.
What's that? Yeah, Louis C.K. But he,
gotta go,
but
guys.
See you, Jim. Bye, thanks, Jim, for being here. Yeah, I was just disappointed by how hard it was for him to live that down when it just felt like, you know, old white guy stupid stuff. It didn't feel like, it didn't, I mean, I can't help but think somewhere out there, I bet there's a girl wishing I had not done something I did. Yeah. And now I'm waiting for that story to pop up somewhere in my past, whatever it might be.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Something about our culture should also be about growing and learning and being better.
There you go.
Condemning the past, but blasting people with the past. It's so, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Jim.
Our prime minister was a drama teacher in high schools before he was a politician. And there's a couple of pictures of him in blackface. It's probably not appropriate and so on. But years ago, I mean, people did it. I mean, I dressed up as Saddam Hussein one time. Is that a bad thing? You know, who knows? But poor Trudeau got a lot of bad press about those events.
Well, you guys aren't from the same generation, and like I think of Trudeau as being closer to my generation.
He is very much so.
And my generation wouldn't wear blackface no matter what.
Really?
Whereas I could see you. your generation, it was appropriate at the time for whatever instance it was. But I'm 50. I look back on my life. There was never a time that I would have felt it was appropriate to put blackface on and pretend I was of a different culture for whatever. Dressing up as Michael Jackson would not have been considered appropriate. Maybe I grew up strange, but I would have. I really see it as a generation and as a generational thing. Some of this stuff has to be taken. Like we can't condemn you for dressing up as Saddam Hussein for that time period. Probably would have been appropriate. Now this stuff is not appropriate. If you showed up in blackface tomorrow, well, that would totally be inappropriate.
Definitely. It's hard to say you haven't heard that there's a problem.
It's tough. It's tough.
Well, and then, can you know those Cockney guys that with the outfits that, you know, they're a button suits and so on. Can people dress up as them? Pretend to be British?
Right.
You know, like where does the line draw? You know, there's a million lines to draw.
I got into a almost a crying fight with my daughter, my youngest daughter, a couple weeks back because she was on TikTok and she was making fun of a white girl that was wearing a sombrero and a poncho celebrating Cinco de Mayo. And she's like, that's totally inappropriate. That's cultural appropriation.
Yeah.
And she shouldn't be acting that way. And she was mad about it. And I'm looking at it and I'm like, what's really wrong with it? It's racist. And she's given me the riot act. She's 13 years old. She's given me the riot act. And she's getting angry at me for not recognizing it and accusing me of being racist for not recognizing it. And I can't help but look at her and just go, I don't know. This sounds like a white person's opinion. This doesn't sound like something that Latinos are shouting out about. Not to mention Cinco de Mayo is an American holiday. It's not a Mexican holiday. It's recognized in the United States. It's never been recognized in Mexico as a holiday.
Except in Pueblo.
Right. Well, yeah, except for in Pueblo. It's the only place that it's recognized as an official holiday. And so it really enlightened me to the difference in generations, the difference in thinking. I really felt like what was her offense is what she's been taught online. And I really feel like it was the gringo half of her. It wasn't the Latin half of her that was offended.
Well, when a Mexican says, remember the Alamo, it means an entirely different thing.
That's right. Remember when we won? That's the Latino side of things. Yeah, we remember the Alamo often.
Yeah. Oh, well, it is a tough thing, this political correctness, you know. I can see that in polite, there's a politeness about it. As a Canadian, we're really big on politeness and so on. But at the same time, to a person's just saying what they are, you may not think they're polite, but then you're making an opinion about the person. It's not like a cancel culture, just that, you know, look out for this person. They may continue to behave in this direction, you know. Anyway.
I agree. In fact, a lot of times, and I try and teach my kids the same thing, is I keep my mouth shut. If all of a sudden I get enlightened to some of the thinking somebody I'm dealing with is garnering, I might just, like you said, just good to know. I'll keep that for reference later in my dealings. I didn't realize until now that's the kind of person I was dealing with.
Yeah, and to stifle the conversation is really, you know, it's better to know.
My conversation with my youngest, I was really playing devil's advocate with her to see how she would react. And we had a couple of conversations afterwards, just making it very clear to her that if you're strong in your convictions, then you should be able to hear the pros and cons of whatever opinion it is that you've formed. If you're strong in your convictions, then they'll stand up against arguments. You'll have well thought out arguments that defend the position that you've decided to take.
Yes.
And you shouldn't.
I think that's important. I watch Fox News sometimes, you know, to see what it is, how they interpret what I'm looking at.
There's so much that's going to tears or anger right now, when it probably that energy should be used for forethought, for research, because if there's something valid there, then it will stand up against arguments against it, because it will have better arguments, better information.
That's right, because it's not necessarily that you want to change opinions of the people in front of you, but just getting arguments that will work, because it's much easier to give a person a new idea than it is to change their old one.
Oh, that's profound. Yeah, absolutely, Jim. Yeah. It's people feel solace in their grounding. They're grounded in those opinions.
That's right.
And somebody comes and challenges them, they get freaked out and scared.
Mm-hmm.
They don't want to talk to you. They want to fight with you.
No communication then.
Yeah. And that's kind of the experience I was having with my daughter. And since then, we've had a couple of different conversations where I'm sorry, I must be bleeding through somebody's speakers.
Oh, maybe mine.
We've had a number of different conversations now where it's like, you should invite the counterpoint. You should be checking to see if your thinking is sound. You should feel comfortable with other people's opinions and other people's fat. They may actually have better information than you. And if that's the case, you should apply that to what you're thinking and not be scared of change.
I've found in some conversations that go over a long period of time, when you can make a basis of agreed upon facts early without trying to go to conclusions right away, until finally you've got a bunch of agreed upon facts that actually contradict their conclusion, is sometimes an interesting way to go. And then you say, okay, well, if your conclusion's not right, then what would you suggest as an alternative? And of course, you don't jump just to yours, but let them, maybe there's some place in between that they'll come to or whatever. And maybe it's comfortable for me too, if they can come to something that's less extreme than what they had begun. Anyway, that's just, it's an interesting thing, you know, because my God, there's a variety of ways to live and ways to think in this world.
I give a lot of respect to my parents for being real travelers when we were growing. They made travel such a part of our education.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think I would have as much of an open mind for other cultures if I hadn't spent so much time living amongst the variety of different people.
Mm-hmm. I might have said on this platform before that one time I was with my mother and her friend and the friend's daughter, and so the daughter and I were of the same generation, and in the midst of this conversation, my mother's friend said, "Well, you take your average person," and the daughter turned around and said, "Mother, you don't know an average person." Being an officer, a military officer's wife, it was probably true.
Well, Paul, you got anything to chime in with?
Yeah, I was just wondering if BB is sensitive to singing an American song, an English song. I'll bet she does that.
Well, she does. And I gave her some other examples. Like, I kept asking her, I've adopted a style because I'm balding of wearing a skull cap. My skull caps are modeled out after the kufas that the Muslims wear. Am I being racist by wearing my cap? Because, I mean, I definitely am not intentionally being racist. I'm not trying to appropriate their culture. If anything, I appreciate the style, even though I'm not of the same religion.
Well, and how did she relate to that?
She said, absolutely not. Absolutely. And then I used an example of, what about at St. Patrick's Day, when we're all drinking green beer and eating cabbage and corned beef? Is that being racist? I mean, all these people, you can bet they're Latinos drinking green beer on St. Patrick's Day, and your mom puts up all the St. Patrick's Day decorations in our house to make it a fun day of celebration. Are we being racist and culturally appropriating that? And she had a very firm opinion that that was not the case. But for some reason, this idea of a poncho and I mean, to be fair, it was a very white girl with very blonde hair and blue eyes. And I really think that's what set her off, was this very white person dressed up in a poncho and
a sombrero. If she darkened her face up a little bit. And
yeah, right. That wouldn't be racist. Well, I also use the example of the computer club. I like to put a sombrero on my logo on the computer club.
There
is that
go.
Racist?
There you go.
Right?
Mm-hmm. But there are rubias in Mexico.
Oh, absolutely.
There are, yeah.
Yeah, my eldest daughter's one of them.
And if you go to up the coast on the shortcut road to Kino Bay, there's a little corner grocery store, and you go in there, and it's a family of blue-eyed Mexicans,
right? Probably of German descent.
Yeah, we drove up a trench in our Westphalia one time in Mexico, and all of the kids, because we were in the Westphalia, it was a peculiar car. All the kids were waving at us at the farms, and they were all dressed in in the Mennonite outfits and
stuff like that. Yeah.
And lots of blondes there, that's for sure. There was no doubt about it. And they were, when we talked to them, they were completely Mexican in their language. They apparently they did speak German too, but I didn't. So we were trying to converse in Mexican and English, you know. But
yeah, I think that what we're dealing with right now, right at this moment, we're dealing with the generation of outrage.
Yeah.
It feels like it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what your politics are. You're just really ready to be angry.
Yeah. And it's unfortunate because there are so many things that we agree about. And if the politicians would focus on what we agree about and get on with doing what we all want, instead of finding little places to bicker and edges and saying no, and crossing their hands, well, we might get further ahead in this situation we're in right now.
I completely agree. You were talking about that earlier, and I've found most of the success I've had in confrontations just start out with, what are we all agreeing on? What are the things that we can both say are true?
Yeah.
And then we can work our way. Think about healthcare in the United States is always, you pull people, 70% of people want universal healthcare. Well, then how is it even an issue? Why are we even debating about it? What we should be doing is sitting around a table figuring out how to make it work.
Well, it's because there's big lobbies of the medical and pharmaceuticals that are against it.
Provoking the angst and frustration and creating fragile people out there that are angry at the arguments instead of looking for the way to make it work, the solution.
And let's face it, healthcare is a lost cause. Yeah, they've already discovered the cause of death for all people.
What's that? Birth.
Yeah,
birth.
So,
we're all dying.
Yes, we're all dying.
Get over yourself.
And there's not enough healthcare to keep us alive forever. So it comes down to, you know, some people obviously are going to have better outcomes than others. And I think in the United States, people somehow feel that they're in control of it right up to the end. Even if they don't have any money and they wish they did, at least they know that if they had it, they could, you know. Whereas in other countries, it's basically, you know, line up for the bus. The bus is coming, you know. And it's a different attitude.
Yeah, you know, just on that point, and we should shut this down. But I've felt since I've lived in Mexico 25 years, and I've always felt like I have better health care here than I do in the United States, and it's because of my financial situation and the availability. And somebody in my family gets sick or hurt, we rush them to the doctor. We worry about them being sick or hurt. In the United States, somebody gets sick or hurt, we sit and we ponder, is it going to be worth how much we're going to have to pay for that health care?
Yep.
We worry about how much it costs. We don't worry about health.
Apparently, some people are vaccine resistant because of they feel that somehow they're going to be charged.
The latest thing is that the people, the anti-vaxxers, are now interested in wearing masks because they're scared of the vaccinated. That's the latest QAnon. We can talk more about it next week.
Bravo. Bravo.
Well, you know, California is having a lottery of people that have been vaccinated, awarding them big cash prizes. And in the future, people that get vaccinated are going to get a $50 gift card.
That's awesome.
Get vaccinated.
Jeez.
Go ahead, Jim.
Well, it harkens back to my uncle's story about how he didn't like the soup. So his mother said, come on, we're in a hurry. You got to get back to school after lunch. So here's a penny to eat your soup. So he took the penny and ate the soup and went back to school. Well, the next day he wanted a penny for his soup to eat his soup, you know. So, you know, if you start paying people to...
I've always felt like the vaccination should be associated with activities because everybody's in such desperate need to get back doing activities. I felt like we should have been set up to do vaccinations at Semana Santa this last year. It's like, let's just stop talking about trying to keep them out of town and just set up a tent. And if you want to come into town, you got to get vaccinated.
Yeah.
I just thought that would have been a real much more effective. Hold a concert. Hold a Lollapalooza or one of these big Coachella concerts. And the only way you're getting in is if you go through the vaccination tent to begin with.
Or just shoot them in the arm out the window.
Yeah.
Or we could use some of that military surplus that they sell the local government to sit up on the police roof and shoot darts of vaccine at people as they come by.
That's a little bit sci-fi for us, you know.
vaccine sprays on the... Do you remember they did that when we first got into the coronavirus thing? Is they had these disinfectant tents that they distributed out in the streets that people could walk through, and they'd get a shower of disinfectant.
Well, there was a lot of people trying a lot of things in the early days, but anyway, it looks the like the worst days is over now. And, we just had one death in BC yesterday or something like that, so it's coming down.
We're still in yellow here.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, here in Sonora, along the coast, everything, there's a lot of green in Sonora, but up north along the coast, we're all in yellow. Mm. But I don't think our numbers have changed much.
Well, it's only 12:15, but I have to go.
It is 12:15.
Okay. Well, we better
we're
all...
way over. I got to go, too.
Yeah, nice
Jim,
to
we'll
chat.
Talk to you next week.
See ya.
Yeah, nice to chat with you.
Au revoir.
Dad, are you still there?
Goodbye. I'm still here.
All right. Well, you're really quiet this time.
Yeah. You guys, I don't mind just listening. I don't have much to add to it. I do wonder about like what Paul was talking about there with the benefits of getting the vaccinations, if people might just go in repeatedly. And I wonder what would happen if you got that vaccination over and over again, you know?
Right. I did see some news about somebody that inadvertently ended up with three vaccinations.
Really?
And didn't have any ill effects. That was the point of the article that they were writing.
They couldn't tell. So I wanted to kind of have a chance to talk with you for just a second. I've got a couple things I know you don't want to deal with them now, but I'd like to have a little time with you on the
computer. Well, Pop, can I just say goodbye to our meeting, and then I'll turn this streamer off, and we can have a conversation. This is Scott Stimson from International Computer Solutions, still here talking to my dad, and we're going to go. I hope you guys all have a good week. We'll talk next Tuesday. Until then, tech on. I'm stop this stream. Start that. Stop that.